Welcome back to the Detour Live. We've only got a handful of stages left of the tour. Thursday night, photo where we record from. Normally I'm at Iffy's joint, but we've been put up at Jeff Wiseman's, part of the Iffy early morning crew that went around Geelong. He's giving me first, so deals will be up with that. It's not a Heineken. National road champion from Australia, Johnny Chavara, Olympic gold medalist and commentator, Scott McGraw in the voice of Phil Liggett. Now, fellas, I'm obviously transparent on this show. I haven't watched much of yesterday's stage. Had the kids today. It was a bit full on, but all I'm getting smashed with, I'll start with you, Scooter, is what happened with Bike Exchange and the tactics? Can you fill us in on what went down on stage 16?
Well, I'll be transparent just like you, Dan, and say that I was actually working throughout the stage. So I had it on in the background. So I think there are bits that I missed as well or wasn't totally focused on. But, look, difficult mountain stage. Took a fair while for the break to get away. But the whole point of – or 2 points for Bike Exchange were to get Michael Matthews maximum points in the intermediate sprint and possibly try and pick up the stage as well. So he and Yul Janssen got into the break of the day, but approaching – the intermediate sprint, Yul Janssen went on the attack again. He then dragged two riders with him. So they were away when they got to the intermediate, which meant that Michael was only able to pick up or mop up fourth place and not get maximum points. Didn't miss out on an enormous amount of points, but there was some criticism about the tactics, and hopefully if Whitey is coming on tonight, we can clear things up. I think it's just a situation that they were going for the stage. They wanted to win the stage. They wanted it to be aggressive. Yul Janssen went on the attack. Unfortunately, two riders went with him. Once they were there out in front, you're not sitting up and going back to try and help Bling win the sprint because he's now up in front. So you just have to roll with it through the sprint. They picked up what they got out of it. And then it was all about those two guys trying to maximise an advantage to come away with the stage win. And Michael picked up third on the stage, which is a good result. Sonny Corbelli pipped him at the top of the last little pinch to the finish, but it was a solo rider out in front that was, you know, went on the last climb, which is Patrick Conrad, Austrian champ, and he was just too good for them on the uphills and was able to ride away and ride solo to the finish. So, look, it was a good result, obviously a great result for Bora and for Patrick, the Austrian champ, and close enough, close for Michael Matthews, but it just didn't quite go the way they wanted it to.
Phil, with us, before on the show, it is stressful trying to win this green jersey. It's not as black and white as, say, when you go from the yellow.
No, it's been a great race for the green jersey. Although Cavendish has held it now for 15 days in the green, he's now got a very, very narrow lead now. A good point score today, which won't happen, of course, for Michael. He might get a couple early on because it's a bit of a flat ride to the last two climbs of the day, the only two climbs of the day. But it's been a good competition. Cav rode again within himself, his team all with him. He stayed in the big peloton of riders almost to the very end. And in the end, he came in just a few minutes behind the green jersey peloton. So he's getting through, but the next 2 days are absolutely crucial and the most difficult. So we don't know what's going to happen for the battle on Friday because Cavendish has got to get these through these 2 days. Don't think it'll be a problem for Michael Matthews. He looked sharp yesterday. He went out for the win, but that's what he wanted. If he gets the green jersey, it'll be almost by default in that respect. But he rode well yesterday, looked good, got pipped on the finishing line in the sprint as well behind Conrad, who was, by the way, only the third Austrian cyclist ever to win a stage of the Tour de France. Last one was Georg Totschnig, I think, and he was way back to 15, 17 years ago. So big day for the Austrians, and I thought the Australians rode well. Like a lot of people, I didn't quite understand why Yul Janssen attacked so near to the green jersey sprint point and not take Matthews with him. I think I'd have been inclined to have sat up, but I did commentate that when there was the three leaders and I saw Conrad catch them, I actually said, now this guy's caught up, the stage is done, this guy will win the stage because he had the best rap, I think. But, you know, he's only won two national titles and no other bike race for 3 years. And now he wins a stage of the Tour de France. It's amazing.
Yeah. If you're always looking for a chance to lay the boots in the team Bike Exchange. What was your take on the stage, mate?
Well, I did watch the stage, so I wasn't busy with anything else or missing it or whatever, so I watched the stage. I actually didn't think that Chris Jensen actually made that attack with a three. I thought he counted the total energy guy went, and he went up to him and went over the top of him, true, but I didn't think he instigated that last one. But I don't think it was important to them. I mean, they're carrying on. If he gets 20 points or 16 points, that wasn't the issue. It was go for the stage. It's what they were trying to do. They were an aggressive stage to go for that. And for to insinuate their sort of troubles in the camp, they're all switched on writing for Michael. That was a plan set up, and they put it together. It was a fantastic ride. You know, it's a Pyrenean stage. Okay, it's not the biggest mountains of the Pyrenees. They're happening today and tomorrow. But it was a good, tough day. And to be in the hunt, to finish third, you know, close to a win, that's impressive for Michael. Very, very good ride. But I can tell you, I agree with you, Phil. Patrick Conrad, you could tell he was going to win from about 50, 60K out. He made a couple of other little bangs up the road. There was no one in the same horsepower as him in that group. And once he went away, it was all over. But the only other thing is I don't think that really Cav's under too much pressure these next 2 days. I know they're tough. But you have a look at them. There's no – first half of the stage, there's no climbs in both – today and tomorrow. So he gets all the way to the start of that first Cat 1, the Pirasud, which is a great climb, know it well. He gets back there. It doesn't matter. He does ride tempo in their little group with the Koenig Quickstep boys. And they've got plenty of time. He won't even be close to the cut. It's exactly the same tomorrow. So I don't think, unless he gets real, you know, a crook knee or something, I can't see him not making Paris.
Yeah, I agree, John. I agree. And we're going to the highest pass at the finish line today in the Pyrenees, 2,215 metres, I think it is. And we've only climbed it once to the finish line, and it was Nairo Quintana, who isn't going quite so well this time, but you never know.
Yep. I thought there were, 2 days ago in Andorra was the highest when they went to 2,400. So that's
so did I. I fell for that one because they gave the Henri de Grange award on the Envalira, and I thought that was the high spot of the tour. So I don't read the route book very much. I get excited by where I'm going when I find out the day before.
And but it was 2,400. That was 2,400. So I think that was...
Yeah, it was in feet. It was 6,000. It was 6,900 feet. I remember saying that on TV. This one's over 7,000 feet. In fact, if I look at my notes, it's 7,267 feet today. It's the highest pass... but as is the finishing line, they didn't want to give you the extra $5,000 award as the Henri de Grange, which they always give to the highest climb of the tour. So that's where they're spreading it.
There you go. Yeah.
And it's probably tax-free in Andorra anyway. So it's all
for sure. Yeah. Matthew Boarding Nong says, can I be the first to predict Ifri's tip for tonight's stage? Wout van Aert.
Matthew, I can only say, Matthew, you must have had an early tinny there.
No, Matthew, I've actually changed my tip today. It's focaccia. Oh, no, rhymes with focaccia. Oh, focaccia, that's it.
You're right.
Put some vinegar on that focaccia, John.
You were talking before, Ify, because I wasn't up with... Scooter, what were they trying to infer in the media that was going on within Bike Exchange? Like there was a rift and essentially they were like over bling and they were trying to flick him for the points. Because if you're talking about someone like a Chris Jule Jensen, I mean, you're not going to find anyone more sort of in terms of a team player that gets it. Like,
yeah. Well, when you say they, Dan, I don't think that was... you know, the general cycling media that were inferring that. It was just one particular, commentator that's a non-expert that was, you know, throwing something out there about, maybe there's just a lack of respect for Michael Matthews within the team. And he has previously left that team in interesting circumstances and now come back. So, yeah, look, that's basically just rubbish. Obviously, they like him.
And a non-expert.
A non-expert, so a non-cycling expert. someone that's never shaved their legs, you know, if that narrows it down.
Oh, wow.
Phil doesn't shave now, but he did.
I still shave my legs. Sorry, Dan.
Phil, how many Tour de France's have you covered now? Like, what are we up to?
This is 49.
Okay, 49. So in that time, did you detect a pattern that from stage 13 to 17 are the mental, it's the mental death zone in terms of that's when you crack? Like when you're on tour, things really start giving you the irrits. You start flipping off. You know, if anyone watched the show last night, if he gives me a bit of a bob, you just fire one. But this is the problem with 14 to 17. And you, do you find that as well with the commentators and, you know, people can't see Paris yet?
Well, it's true. Of course, I don't get the same reaction now because I'm sat in a studio in London and I've been battling the London traffic just before an hour ago getting here. So I don't get the same atmosphere I would have got on the tour. But in the last week, yeah, there's a definite change of attitude. Among the riders, it's always going into the last days in the mountains and they're frightened to death. They won't get to that final time trial before they go to Paris. There's always that element of doubt. This year, there's an exception because there's some preoccupied with the thoughts of the Olympic Games. COVID hangs over us like a big umbrella. And there's not many journalists here. One or two of the Danish journalists have emailed me and because they're not on the Tour de France either. And we all miss the family. You know, we're all getting used to the routine now. We're all talking about the rides we think might have this to do before and after and if and what. But yeah, everybody's getting a little bit tired for sure because they've been up early, driven lots of kilometers to keep up with the race and beat it by a day all the time to do the commentary. It gets a bit wearing. Luckily, Paul and I used to take it day by day and just laugh our way through the whole thing. I think if you have a laugh, you take all the pressure off your job. But it's going well, and I'm enjoying it, I have to say.
That's rare. Like, that's why you guys had really good chemistry because, like, that's just not common. Normally,
and you think we get fed up with each other's stories. You think we get fed up with you because we've heard them all before. You know, we always go into the outside broadcast truck when we arrive at 8:30 in the morning because all the technicians, all our American technicians have been flat out since 4 a.m. getting all the things working, parking the trucks, being pushed around by the gendarmes. And so that by 9 o'clock, they feel as though they've been up all night. And we walk in and we go, "What's up with you? It's a great day out there. What do you mean you can't see it? Got no windows?" And we tell them a few jokes and we leave them happy. And then we go and say, and I used to say to Paul, "Right, now let's go to the box, Paul, and start thinking about the bloody race for sure." And that's
Scooter, it was a big contrast way back when we used to cover with Fox Sports. I remember that day we were talking to the Universal NBC crew or whatever, and they were saying, "Oh, how many guys in Fox?" I said, "You're looking at them, mate." There was three of us. And I think
there's only 85 of us. There's only 85 of us.
So that does make a difference.
We started with two. We started just you and I. Then we branched out to three. So we a huge budget increase to have three people there on the ground. I posted on social media this morning actually a photo from Carcassonne when your replacement when you went to work with the Green Edge team. We had Ben Miller. B-roll. And photo of us filming a piece to camera live to Australia for Fox Sports at the front of Carcassonne, which was a great memory in front of that incredible castle. It blew me away, the stories of Carcassonne and being there. And but a big team, mate, two people.
Justin, as you mentioned Carcassonne, of course, you can't go to Carcassonne and have the cassoulet. So Big Jeff has cooked a cassoulet. So when we finish the podcast tonight, all my riding mates who normally do the Thursday ride and the Tuesday ride, they're all here at Jeff's. So we're all going to watch the stage, eat the cassoulet, and have some of the warm, what do you call it, the warm red wine, the German wine. And it should be a big day.
How is it you can't say Pogaccia? And yet you can always say cassoulet because it's food.
Focaccia. I've got it right now. Okay. The pog.
Hey, Johnny, just to finish your story about the Fox team of two, When I started in 1973, it was me. No one came to the tour. The whole TV unit was in London on an earpiece. And the front of the show, before we went live, was done in London and no pictures on my monitor. So the guy back there would say, right, Phil, start talking. We're showing a roll of pictures with pictures of the sun coming up and riders in shadows. So I'd say, you know, hello and welcome to the 16th day of the Tour de France. We're showing the general classification. And there you can see the leader overall after yesterday. Say, and then they would say, right, on your own now. And then I would say, and as you can see, so-and-so on the front of the peloton. That was how we started the tour back in 73. It's changed a bit since then.
Slightly. Yes.
Always got a one. You've always got to one up people, don't you, Phil?
Well, I just like everybody to know where I've spent all my youth, you see.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, Johnny, my question to you, we're talking about Carcassonne, the castle. Isn't there a very interesting story about the walled city of Carcassonne, under siege? They were under siege and they come up with some crazy way of faking that they had so many supplies, you know, because I think the invading army, you know, surrounded the city. Do you remember the story we're talking about? And they were just going to starve them out.
Pig's ass. Oh, man, no, pig's head it was. That's right.
Yeah, go for it. Tell us the story. Come on.
Yeah, well, that's the truth. They decided
it's called drunk history.
they circled the wonderful world city of Carcassonne and thought, well, we'll just wait them out. We'll starve them out. And then, which they did, and then gradually, you know, they had a pig's head. And they threw it over the fence like it was just rubbish. And the invaders thought, oh, they got so much food, they're throwing this away. And they gave up. So there you go.
I heard they stuffed the pig with all the best food. And then when the pig exploded, they saw all these bits and pieces.
No, I thought it was just the pig's head. And they knew if you could throw that bit away, then, you know, you normally it would only be a bare bone, but it still had a lot of meat on it and whatever. These guys aren't starving at all.
One final point about the traveling circus is, Phil, at least you traveled, you're all on the same page. You're all professionals, all working on the tour. You knew what to expect. Problem with our two-man crew from Fox is we're on the iffy tour. So we'd get back to the hotels at like 11. They'd all be like on the red wine, you know, have had beautiful food. Our meals were always cold. They'd rip us going, whoa, what took your time? Where you been? And we've been working all day. You know, it's the last.
That's because Scotty took 35 takes to get the bloody thing done. That's right.
Yeah, but it's just by the end. So this is a danger zone. So we're not on tour. I was starting to feel it, but now we can see Paris. So we've just got to keep moving forward. I've got one for you, Scotty.
That's the kind of bullshit that gets people pissed off. Yeah.
Philip Russell says, g'day, Dan. Can you get Scooter to explain how they work out the cutoff time percentage, please? Before you do, Matt White's joined us. So,
there he is.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
Hello, Matt.
Hello, mate.
Good.
Hey, can we put Whitey to it? Whitey's in the race. He knows exactly how they're doing it. We just had a question, Whitey, about how they do the cutoff time. Can you explain that?
Okay, so the best explanation of that one. So they categorize the climbs into different difficulties. And then, depending on the difficulty, they have an average speed. So if it's a rated in the third category, and for example, if it's the average speed is between 36 and 38, it's 13%. If between 39 and 42, it's 15%. Like, so it's graded. They're graded one on the speed of the race, and secondly on the difficulty of the stage.
I'm glad you came on just then, Matt, because I learned something.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. So it goes from, so much for the riders.
From 20% for the like a flat stage to or down to like 12% is the lowest. Is that how it goes? It ranges between 12 and 20.
I think isn't it 25% Matt, for the time trial?
No. I think it's 15% as a maximum now, and then the only time it's higher is on the time trials.
Okay. Yeah.
We saw that at the Giro d'Italia with the time trial, with several riders being eliminated because Anna van der Breggen was so fast. I was actually part of a group of riders that were eliminated from the time trial at the Tour de Ponte, I think it was, because Lance Armstrong just before he got cancer. He was absolutely flying. And, he ripped in a big-time trial that put a few of us out the boot. And they actually allowed us to continue the next day because it was a double day. We had a stage that morning. And if you were way down on GC, you only had like an hour break between stages and then the time trial, whereas he had maybe 3 hours of recovery and was much, much quicker than us. So, they adjusted that and let us back in.
Yeah. And look, sometimes the commissaires can make exceptions. If you've had problems, mechanical problems, they can bend the rule. They can make slight adjustments, but there's been a few adjustments over the years. So back in the day, there was that rule there. You might remember, Scott, that if a certain percentage of the bunch was together, I think it was more than 30% of the bunch, then it didn't matter about the time cut. So I remember guys doing head counts, how many guys were in the group pedo, and if there was a certain, and then so because that was when Mark Cavendish was with HCC, and so he was finishing outside the time cut on a lot of days because that was the rules, and there was more than 30% of the group. Then they changed the rule again and said if you're outside the time cut with that group, they were going to dock your green jersey points. So there's been lots of different modifications of the rules over the years, but now it's pretty much they've tightened the percentages here at the Tour de France a little bit from the past. They're a little bit more generous at the Giro because the days are much more brutal, and usually the weather conditions as well. But basically now, if you're outside the time cut, that's you're booking your plane trip home.
Yeah, and there was another one. Remember, I think it was Torino Adriatico. Jens Heppner might have won it, and they had the opposite where everyone did the go slow, and they thought that there was so much safety in numbers that I think there were 30 riders or so that went up the road. Most of the teams were represented, so the whole peloton just cruised and came in way outside the time cut, and the organizer was so upset with them, they just cut them all, and for the next number of 4 or 5 days, whatever it was, the race continued with like 30 or 35 riders. That was it.
That also happened in the Tour de France in 1976.
Guys, I don't mean to be rude, but Whitey is on a BlackBerry. He could blow up at any point, and we need to talk about Whitey, stage 16. I didn't see it myself. There's been a lot of chatter. You got some more green jersey points back, but people are wanting to understand the tactics because some people are saying, why was Chris Yule Jensen mopping up some of the points from Bling in the stage?
Well, it was a pretty hectic part of the stage where we were trying to force the break. And then Chris was marking guys who were riding aggressive there just before that break went. So we came off one of the climbs. There was a bit of a flat section. Guys were moving. Chris had jumped into the back of that group. We told him to sit on there, and then it went straight into the next categorized climb. So he was with two other guys, and then Bling won the kick for fourth there.
Yeah, that's exactly how I saw it. It's just that certain commentators were questioning Robbie.
Not me, McKeown, no,
especially.
Not me.
No, Robbie McKeown especially. What's Chris doing out there? He should wait and bring Bling up so he can go for the sprint. So that was the question.
Yeah, well, they were waiting to try to get over to the – well, they were going immediately into a Category 2 climb after that. So the idea was to get him over, mark those guys, and then get him over the Category 2 climb so he could help Bling after that.
Yeah. Yep. Scooter. I didn't see a problem with it either.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So, yeah, stage victory took more importance over picking up points, and he still got points anyway. So, but look, today's stage is a bit more challenging, isn't it, for Green?
I think it cost us 3 points. Between fourth place and first place, it's 2017, 15, 14, so it cost us 4 or 5 points there. But the idea was to try to win the stage there, which is obviously more points. But Chris was pretty excited there to get in the move there with Michael. And it was a tough one, real tough one to make.
What is the plan of attack for stage 17, Whitey? Looks pretty filthy at the end there.
Yeah, it does. So if you guys can remember, there was a stage a couple of years back, I think 2018, where we started on the grid. Remember that concept that didn't last very long? Yes. Okay, well, the last 60, it was a bit of a fizzer, The last 65 kilometres of today's stage is exactly the same.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So basically, that stage, we did 2 or 3 kilometres and turned and went straight onto the first climb. So the only difference is we've got 115K of flat beforehand. So we're starting in the outskirts of Toulouse at the moment. It's windy. It looks like the rain should hold out. We've got a bit of headwind at the start, then some crosswind sections as we go towards the Pyrenees. And then there, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's a hell of a lot of meters of climbing in that final today. And the big thing for me, what will change is if a team like Ineos want to win the stage today, or are we going to see another big group sail down the road and take the win? Because UAE have no interest in controlling these stages, because all they're doing is looking after their leader. And it depends how big a group goes in the first hour, whether it will be brought back. And depending on if Ineos, who haven't won a stage here, if they're keen to try to set Carapaz up today for a stage win, or just wait and support him and be around him, because at the end of the day, he doesn't look like he has the ability to beat Pogačar anyway.
He doesn't have it. He doesn't have it, mate. It's going to be Chuck Lotto again. It'll be 30 rider Chuck Lotto, a couple of teams that haven't really done a lot. And yeah, get the hat
Ralph
out.
Van Aert, Ralph Van Aert.
I think it being Chuck Lotto, but with the green, with the sprint, a fair way into the stage, but on the flat, how do you think that will play a role in the tactics and what Cavendish, he's been able to sort of, you know, through the mountains, but he's been able to sort of lay low these last couple of days. But the gap between he and Michael is starting to come down a bit. So how do you think that intermediate sprint will play today?
Well, it'll probably be mopped up by the breakaway anyway. So I don't think you'll see those two sprinting against each other. I wouldn't think Cav will be, Quickstep will probably have Michael marked out, but Michael might marked out. They'll be marking him, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Michael be in a break again today. They'll probably put someone on him so they can try to beat him in the intermediate sprint to lessen the points gain. But I would expect that it'll be a bit of a fizzer for the intermediate sprint unless we see, you know, Colabrelli. I think Colabrelli and Michael Matthews will probably mark each other. So if one of them's in the break, both of them will be. And then if I was Cav, I'd probably lay low and save as much energy as possible because it's a pretty tough last 60-70K. I think it's more than 3,500 meters of climbing in that last 65K alone.
If Blin can mop up as many of these intermediate sprint points over the next couple of days and say, you know, Cav wins on stage 19 or say he just wins in Paris, is he still technically a chance of taking out the green and can Bling sort of smell blood now after yesterday?
Oh, look, we're doing what we can. We know that on a flat sprint head-to-head, you know, 19 times out of 20, we're not going to beat Cav. Yeah, he's the fastest guy here. There isn't too much competition as far as, you know, he's got the best lead out. He's the fastest guy here. A lot of the sprint guys have gone home. But it's not Michael's forte to on those flat sprints against him. So, you know, it's been pretty clear that we can win intermediate sprints. Michael has a very good climbing ability. He passes categorized climbs that other sprinters don't. Him and Colabrelli have shown that out of that style of rider, they're clearly the two best at mopping up the green jersey points. And we'll continue in that vein. We've only got 2 days to go. It's only today and tomorrow, because the day after that is a pretty straightforward either a day for the break or another sprint day for Cav. So we're just going to keep plugging away there, and we can't control how Cav's going to get through the mountains, but he's certainly, we're going to cruise through the mountains, whereas Cav has been very well supported. When he's getting dropped there, yesterday I had 4 guys with him from the get-go. So he's always got company, and the wheels would have to really fall off Cav in these final two stages for us to win the green jersey. But we're not going to give up. We're not going to give up. And at the end of the day, it would only be one bad climb, and Cav could be in trouble.
Mm. Scooter,
what about Esteban coming into the mountains again? How's he feeling, and what's his form like, you think?
Yeah, look, I think he's starting to get a little bit bogged down. It'll be interesting to see how he handles these last two climbing days, mate. I don't. He certainly won't be looking to go in a move today. But yeah, fingers crossed he can get through and stay where he is. I struggle seeing him moving up, because I think to move up anywhere he would have to take one of these Chook Lotto breaks that goes and takes 10 or 15 minutes, and I don't think it's so hard to get a guy of 54 kilograms into a move on the flat. We'll see. But it's going to be hard, because I think these next 2 days, for him going head to head with the best five or six climbers is going to be very, very difficult.
Now, we haven't asked you for a couple of days, Whitey, but how's the grub been? We've got a casserole here in Geelong tonight. We're pretty excited about that.
Cassoulet.
Yeah. What's the local?
No good. Well, we're in duck territory now, mate. So we had duck last night in Toulouse, and I'm sure we're in our normal hotel there, just on the outskirts of Po, where near the Gypsy encampment. And right. We will be having duck for the next 2 to 3 days. I am sure of it.
We obviously can't go into detail, but I'll never forget in 2012 that drive in to the start at Po. And there's a few locals in the rotunda there. Yeah, it was quite cold, and they were just keeping warm. So
I think they were continuing their celebrations from Bastille Day, I think, Dan.
That's right. That's right. Very friendly area. Very friendly area.
Very friendly area early in the morning.
That's right.
Well, hang on. I'm trying to work this out. So you're saying on Bastille Day, they were trying to create a larger population.
That was good. You've joined the dots.
Along those lines, yes.
I'm telling you, Bastille Day. It's Bastille Day today. So what celebrations are planned? Yes.
We should all be
right. None for us. I dare say a few of the smaller French teams will be trying to make the break of the day. But it's going to be a big fight again to make the Chook Lotto. But like I said, with 115 kilometers of flat and at times crosswind, it'll be interesting to see the composition that finally sticks.
All right, mate. Anything you want to add, Phil, before we let Whitey go?
No, I think you're doing a great job, Whitey. Now, have you paid that fine you got a couple of days ago from the commissaires? 500 Swiss francs it was. I don't know what you said to them, but you didn't obey the instruction.
And you know what that was for? I'll tell you what that was for. Simon Clark crashed early in a stage, and it was really windy start there. And when Simon was coming back from the crash, and I just slowed slightly to enable him to get onto the back of the car, and the commissaire told me to move up, and I couldn't move up much further. We're on a very twisty road. So I just stayed there to help Clarkie get back into the I was holding my car position, car 12, and looked at that night time and ended up getting a €400 fine for disobeying UCI instructions to help another Australian, not even on my team.
That's very unusual, I must say. They usually turn a blind eye for that. You must have found a beginner on the commissaire's list.
Well,
he's the usual suspect, Simon.
The problem is the guys on the motorbikes, they're the French, UCI, and so they certainly how can I say this? Yeah. They do turn a blind eye to certain people, and whereas the commissaires in the cars there, that's an international group of commissaires, whereas the commissaires on the motorbikes, they have their favourites, that's for sure.
So I remember a story, Tour of Qatar with Lorenzo, and he had a bit of a stink eye on with Thomas Eagles. Hey, I don't like that guy. And I said, Lorenzo, you need to flip this. It was hot. Offer him a Coke. First day, offer him a Coke. And, hey, you want a Coke? And then the guy was like, oh, and then bang, sculled it. He could get away with everything. By the end of that race, like, you need a lighter, like, you know, whatever.
You're not saying there's bribery in the Tour de France, I hope.
Mate, hot stage, offer him a Coke or something, and you're home. You're home. That's all you got to do, mate.
There you go.
The UCI are making more money than some of the teams here, do you?
You're right. You're right.
Yeah. Two things, Marty. I'm just going to say about Simon Clark was obviously Simon that was involved with Richie Porte in separate teams, but swapping to help, you know, stopping to help Richie when he had the mishap in the tour a couple of years ago. Great mateship story that was penalised because they weren't in the same team. But have you heard, because we've had the conversation a couple of times back here about the road race for the Olympics and who Australia may now select that Jack Haig has withdrawn. Have you heard any murmurings of what's going on? You know, we sort of think that Ben O'Connor's probably the right person to do it, the guy on form. But have you hearing anything behind the scenes of who that might, rider might be?
All I've heard is that it looks like Ben O'Connor is declining riding the Olympics because I think he's pretty much expecting that he's going to finish the Tour de France in a body bag because he's going to be going very, very deep to hold his general classification spot. And everyone knows that the turnaround from getting on a plane on Sunday night or Monday morning and going to Tokyo is going to be a tough one for everyone. But for the guys who are riding general classification, especially someone like Ben in his first Tour de France riding general classification. But that's, I did hear a story that that he has declined going to Tokyo. But I don't know who they have selected. I have no contact with anyone about who they're selecting.
Okay, would you put someone up? What name do you think that might be in the mix? Is it someone that's in the tour, or you know, like Michael Matthews? Obviously, he's a name that pops up as someone that you know maybe is not suited to the circuit, but you know, top quality rider. I suggested maybe someone that's like a journeyman, like Simon Clark, but he is at the tour and he's not on great form. And then you got someone like Chris Hamilton that's sitting in the wings. You just don't know who's got form that's not at the tour though.
Yeah, and I don't know where Jai Hindley is, where I don't even know where what preparation he's been doing, what races he's coming back for. So, no, I think the guys who are going deep at the Tour de France, besides maybe a couple of the old foxes like Valverde, I don't see it being ideal preparation finishing here, really going really deep. So, yeah, it's a hard one. It's a hard one because it's a course. Yeah, the Olympic Games road race is also very different from a world championships with small teams. And then the guys, and this has been one of the mildest Tour de France's that I've ever seen. I'm sitting in the car now, it's 14 degrees outside and starting to rain, and we're in the 14th of July. So it's going to be, regardless, it's going to be one hell of a shock for the guys going to Tokyo when, you know, they're expecting temperatures in the mid 30s and 80, 90% humidity. So it's interesting, but I've had no contact with anyone involved with selection for the Australian Olympic team. But yeah, if they did their research, then it would probably be a good idea to make a few phone calls to people actually on the ground here at the tour.
Maybe they will.
All right, mate. Well, we better let you get.
I haven't changed my number in the last 10 years, so.
Well, there you go.
Oh, we've got your number.
Just change your phone, not the number. Just change your phone, mate.
Yeah. The BlackBerry, the BlackBerry does work. The BlackBerry does connect to Australia. It does connect to Australia.
Well, I'm sure they all watch the detour, mate. So you'll be expecting a call tomorrow for all the insight on.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Next
no doubt. No doubt. Well,
all right, mate. All right, well, we really appreciate you joining the show. Enjoy today's stage and we'll check in again tomorrow, mate. Hopefully it's a good one and you scoop up some more points for the green jersey.
Yeah, mate. Just keep chipping away. That's all we can do.
Thanks, Whitey.
Cheers, Whitey.
Have a great ride. See you guys.
Great ride.
See you, mate. Head sports director, Matt White. What were you going to say, Scooter?
I was going to say, remember a couple of days ago I threw out the idea that maybe Ben O'Connor is probably the best suited on current form but may decline going.
Yeah, you did.
Remember
you
we said it. That? Yeah, and it. I think John actually berated me, saying how ridiculous Ben is obviously the number one choice to go.
He did.
I did not berate you for saying that. I said he has to be selected. I thought you were saying maybe they shouldn't go for him. I said, well, he's got to, you know, I agree. I didn't think he would go either.
I think you berated him, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Right. No. I'm on your side.
It is day 17. It's day 17.
Well, once we get through this, we'll see Paris and we'll be fine. Phil, before we go, we've got to mention Kareka. Now, tomorrow's show, I'm going to get Jace from the Maldives to come on, who's offered up that fantastic.
Oh, that'd be nice. Love to meet him.
For everyone that donates. So if you donate in the last week, you go into the running to win an amazing prize from the Amila Resorts in the Maldives. So I'll organise all of that. But yeah, keep the donations coming in. kariega.co.za/Peloton. And mate, who's your tip for today's stage in the Stage 17 Chook Lotto?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Tip. Couldn't you believe it? While we've been talking, I had to post my vote over to NBC because they were closing the making of the graphics. So, believe it or not, I've gone for Wout van Aert to win today. I think this guy wants to win the King of the Mountains competition. So I think he'll go on the move early, and he can climb. And if the break gets to the bottom of the Col de Porte, he would be first to the top. So it's just a thought, but. Look, I've never had such a bad tour on predictions. For the whole 17 days, all I've scored is 10 points. And Adam Blythe, comparatively newcomer to our team, the Brit, he's leading with a massive number of points. He had one day when he picked the winner 4 days in succession. And we can't take the same name. And we always get a different pick order. And he still managed to pull that out the hat. So he deserves to be the winner. Yeah. So pull all that one off now. Won't win now, but there you are. I've picked him. I've put the commentator's curse on him.
No worries, mate. Well,
I'm very quiet. I've never known this podcast so quiet. Have you got no more questions for us, Dan, in your little list there?
No, well, normally I go to like an ad break now and we give you the lemon and sour so you can get back to work.
Actually, you're right. It's 10 past the hour here. Yeah. I'm enjoying it so much. I'm losing track of time. I should really not be here.
All right. If you want to hang on a bit longer, Phil, tell us something about
go on.
What's something different that NBC is doing this year? Or is it just the same format, the same procedure? Or are they doing something different about, you know, the stages? Obviously, they haven't been able to travel as much, you know, like before the tour to do previews for stages and things like that. So how are they doing all of that?
I've actually quite enjoyed the show because last year was a big gamble, but it was the only way we could do it. And they got the biggest viewing audience for 10 years. So they thought, right, well, we're not even going to think of going to the Tour de France this year because finding beds and hiring cars and accommodation for 85 people cost a lot of money. And so what was the point? It was so successful. So they never even attempted this year to go to France, except we managed to get the American reporter, who is a really good reporter, in Steve Perino. He's over in America now. He joined Adam Blythe, who we plucked from Great Britain last year. Adam stayed in his job on the motorbike. This guy is such a natural guy. He's never done television before until the last 18 months. And he's not afraid of the cameras. He tells it as it is. For example, he says, well, I'll say, for example, I'll throw a question to Adam. I'll say, well, let's go to Adam Blythe on the moto. I hope he started and is on the way down the hill with the race. And he would meet, there's a 3 second delay. Then he would say, yes, Phil, I'm on the moto. I'm fine. Oh, Philippe Gilbert, just come here. And he calls Gilbert over to have a conversation. I said, Adam, is it time to remind you you're not allowed to talk to the riders from the motorbike? But he and Gilbert are on the same Lotto Soudal team, the best of mates. And it's just we get first conversations from these riders when they're racing past the motorbike. Gilbert said, well, I've just had a flat tire, he says, so I really do need to get back to the peloton. Lovely to see you, though, Adam. And he goes back in the race. So that was a new aspect. And his favourite expression is, well, riders, the riders are just stopping for a wee at the moment, Phil. And I didn't know what to say when he said wee on television. So I said, I see your French is improving, Adam. It's going rather well. And so it's just it's between the two reporters, and we've got the same team in New York, which is Christian Vandeveld, who was a Tour de France cyclist, finished fourth. Bob Rowe claims to have ridden four tours, but in fact only has ridden three tours. And we've got a great presenter in Paul Bearmeister, who admits he's not the man who's the expert of cycling, but he sells it so well and is willing to listen. And also, we've got Chris Horner, who won the Tour of Spain. They're in Manhattan, and we're going around in circles, literally around in circles across the two continents. I'm very happy with the coverage this year. And in fact, the big boss rang last night. I didn't tell him I was actually having a wee when the phone rang in my pocket, but I didn't think I was qualified to say that, like Adam Blythe. and he rang to say how successful the show had been. And he was now said he's now leaving decision for next year as to whether we should cover it from France or from Britain. Why give me the responsibility of making such a decision? I'll wait and see. It's a long way away.
I thought you were going to say, he said, hey, Phil, we've been watching that podcast, The Detour. How do we get those guys on the coverage? Name the price. Well, that iffy guy. Well,
if the American lads knew about this, we could get them on because they would come on. But I think it's a bit of a problem. You know how intense Americans are when they're working. They're not like us relaxed Aussies. Us relaxed Aussies. Can you believe it? I'm a good.
Good stuff. On that note, we'd better let you get back to work, mate.
Okie dokie. That's another 3 minutes, Tom. I better get out of here.
Thanks, cameras,
okay. Thanks, have a great day. And I'll tell you what, it's going to be a super day's racing today. So all the best.
It certainly is. It certainly
is. Okay. Yep. Ciao, guys. Bye.
Cheers, Phil.
Phil Liggett, the voice of cycling. It's that time of the show where we go to our sponsors. And again, great work, John, in managing these guys because they are crucial to the show going ahead. And that is Let's Go Motorhomes.
Where's the photos? But where are the photos, mate?
Yeah, you can plug that book after the break. You've got it live. So here's a quick word from Let's Go Motorhomes and Bikey Shane.
The Let's Go Motorhomes app has everything at the tip of your finger, from car parks to campgrounds, tips and tricks. The app makes your road trip smoother. This is the way to go. Download the Let's Go Motorhomes app today.
Look at this bike. You think it's just a bike, right? But it's not. It's a bike 374 people are looking at. This guy, this girl, them, all looking at it. People from here, there, and wherever this is. People that are looking for a bike. Or just a piece of it. Amateurs. Semi-amateurs. And pro-amateurs. This guy wants this bike, but with this crank. And these bars. This could be the perfect match. But not this one. This girl has a bike to sell. And thousands of people might purchase it. Eyes on Bikes help grow small businesses. His. Hers. Yours. And the latest data and insights help those businesses keep moving. We are the world's number one bike marketplace with over 500,000 products and 900 brands, where buyers and sellers are brought together in a place where a bike is never just a bike. Bike Exchange, where the world buys, sells, learns, and rides.
Thanks again to Let's Go and Bike Exchange. Now, I'll just run through a couple of the viewer comments. Now, Leo, come on, mate. He's not a real sharp one here. He says, who gets the medals if two riders of the same nation come first and second in the Olympic road race? What if today and Primoz first and second? See, what will happen is whoever's wheel crosses the line first will get the gold and whoever's second will get the silver.
I'm having trouble with that question, but anyway, okay. Moving on.
Also, if Cav lines up for a sprint, we'll Eddie Merckx ride the tour next year. I think Leo's out of
the night. There could be a chance of that. Knowing Eddie, he just could pull the number out. You never know.
Yep. Pete Boom says, Stage 19 is not a nailed-on sprint finish. Bike Exchange get other teams to collaborate in the break with Matthews included, which could make it hard for DS to control. So,
yeah.
Well, the opening, I don't know, 50 Ks at that stage is really up and down. So there's one categorized climb, it's only a Cat 4, but it is actually really lumpy, just up and down small hills. And the intermediate sprint is on the top of a, I think it's a 2K rise, something like that, at, 3% gradient or something like that, or 1K. It's not that hard, but it's just a really tough first 50K. So, you're talking about a very super strong team in Tacuna Quickstep, so they might be able to control it. But if teams really want to put them to the sword, it could be a really challenging opening few kilometres for sure.
I guess it's just a matter. It depends on just how knackered you are after these two monster days in the Pyrenees. So if Cav's absolutely nailed, that's a very interesting start to that stage. So all good. Sorry, bud.
What did you just get there, Dan? What did you get?
Jeff, Just dropped off a furphy because we're in Geelong.
Mulled wine, the hot wine. What's it called, Jeffrey?
Gary Tilly's pissed off with you. He said, "Where was the invite, Iffy?"
Oh, sorry, Gaz. I'll send it through.
Will Wizard, Kirby or Hatch Scooter? That's a tough one. Carlton Kirby or Rob Hatch, commentators.
Rob Hatch. Yeah, shoot, clearly. Yeah, Rob. Well, he knows his stuff. He speaks, I think, six languages, knows how to pronounce all the names, all the town names from all the different races, no matter whether it's France, Spain, or Italy, lives in Spain,
you haven't
New Yorker.
Me?
Hey?
Yeah, what?
You having a go at me?
No, not at all. But, yeah, and he lives and breathes it, whereas Carlton Kirby is, at first I struggled to listen to him because he truly is a non-expert of the sport, but he does throw in some entertainment. So Carlton Kirby, this is for anyone that don't understand who we're talking about. These are the Eurosport commentators and on GCN. And Carlton Kirby, he used to do a lot of, or still does, I think, a lot of motorsport for Eurosport and then came across to do some of the cycling. And he just throws in one-liners and gets really up and about and somewhat exciting. To, if you had him all the time, it'd be a bit too much, whereas Rob Hatch, you know, he's a pure expert of the sport. You know, he's a student of cycling. So, yeah, I'd go with Rob every day.
All right. Stuart McIntosh says, I hope the Detour podcast can give daily coverage to the Tour de France Femmes next year, but it will mean 4 weeks straight for you hot on the heels of the Tour.
I can tell you now, we will do it. I could be doing the last week and a half solo, but we will be doing it.
But it's a good point, though, isn't it? That actually is a good point because, yeah, and we all know what it's like to get through the Tour. When you work on it or ride it, when you get to the end, you just get into such a routine. Every day you get up and do this and you get up and do this and you're tired all the way through, but you keep doing it. But as soon as you get to Monday morning in Paris, obviously for you, John, and anyone that's with you, it's all about the long lunch on the Monday, so maybe it's the Tuesday morning when you get up. But it's big withdrawal symptoms. And all of that accumulative exhaustion builds up and you're completely knackered for the next couple of days because you can just keep holding on as long as it's going. But as soon as it stops, poof. And that could be a big challenge for people wanting to watch the women's race. Let's hope that's not the case. And if it is, maybe that needs to be before the Tour, not after.
And even the day after the final stage in Paris, it can be quite stressful getting your flight back to Australia. Yes. I remember one year.
Especially if you get the times wrong.
You got the times wrong and we were about to have a casual lunch and you double checked and what time did you have? It was like an hour 10 from the middle of Paris to your flight leaving.
For some reason, and it was way off. It wasn't like it was 10 in the morning and it was supposed to be, I thought it was 10 at night. It wasn't even like that. It was, I did think it was an evening flight, so I had all day to just chill out in Paris. And then I thought, for some reason, I thought, I'm not actually that sure if that was correct. Let me just check it. And we were at lunch, or about to have lunch, looked at the times, and it was, guys, I've got an hour and 10 for my flight, international, back to Australia, and we're in the middle of Paris. We're like,
was that the year they towed my car away? I think it was.
Oh, I'm not sure. Well, I know we got to the airport. Like Dan's just driven straight up. I've run in, and in Charles de Gaulle, there are certain check-ins that are just temporary. They only set them up just for certain flights at certain gates, and they have like portable, you know, your check-in and your tickets and your baggage tickets. They have those temporary machines or portable machines. So they'd already put those onto a trolley to pack it all up and wheel it away. And I said, you know, look, I've got to make this flight. And I've got to, and they said, well, no, it's a flight to Dubai or whatever it was. Sorry, the flight is closed. I said, yeah, but I've got to get to Melbourne. I'm flying to Australia, and that's my flight to Dubai to get my connection. And with that, they thought, oh, you're going to Melbourne. Oh, okay, 1 minute. And they put it all back together again. Got on, and I made it. Unbelievable turnaround. I had no way. There's no way we thought we were going to make that, did we, Dan? And you drove through Paris. I was as nervous as of the driving, getting to the airport as I was missing the flight.
It was like an episode out of that Banged Up Abroad, except you didn't end up in jail. Like, you know, took a massive risk. Here's the odds for today, boys. Andy Matthews, Pogacar, 3-1. Vinegar Chips, 5-1. Carapaz, 9-1. Lopez and Iran and Quintana, 7-1. Gardu on Bastille Day, and 19-1.
Yeah. Well, I reckon that Wout is actually a very good bet because it's either Pogacar or Pogacar or Wout van Aert, because either the brake will go or the GC boys will race it out. So one or the other.
Free Ranger. There you go. The Pog will ride a watching brief, but Vinegar will throw in his chips and go all in.
I love it.
Vinegar and the chips. Well done.
A quick one. I'll whack it in. I can remember Dennis and I Dennis was dropping me off. He was staying on in Paris, the mad barrister. We were driving into the airport. And then I looked to the left and I saw all this smoke. I said, looks like they're burning rubber or something in there. And that was when the Concorde crashed.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Wow. Dennis the drunk.
Yeah.
What a person. Yeah. I was going to say what a human, but now, I don't think he is.
Before we go, I'll plug the book. So a really nice guy, Warren Beaumont, has written a wonderful book. We tried to get the photos up the other day, but it never happened. So if you look there, it's called, there we go, Australian Cycling Champions. And it's a really, really good book from right at the beginning of cycling in Australia right through now. There's some wonderful photos here. There's one here with a guy. There it is there. You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, who were you looking at? Danny Clark and Don Allen at the top there. Yes.
Yeah. And just under that, the bloke with the hair.
There's Brett Aiken.
Who's the bloke with the hair?
Well, that could be me, but Brett Aiken. I was only chatting with Brett last night.
He's a good man. And here, and there's Cadell there. And the little bloke on the other side next to my face is a very young version of me. So there you go.
I thought you were struggling to recognise who it was, but it was actually you.
It's a great Australian Cycling Champions from Warren Beaumont, 130 years of bicycling racing. It is a fantastic book.
Where do people buy it, John?
I got no idea.
It's a good thing if you can get it.
Tomorrow I will make sure I have the details of where you can get it.
Will Wizard, legitimate question, what happened with Baden Cook's appearance? He didn't survive.
No, he did survive. Good one, Will Wizard. He had a malfunction with his phone, but he's definitely on for tomorrow. So I meant to pull that up. I was going to stir him up because, first of all, he said, my phone's not working. Can you call another number? And then there was problems with that. So it all just got too hard. So it sounded a bit like Whitey with his BlackBerry. So Cookie is on tomorrow. So he survives another day.
Free Ranger, was it Dennis who ate the parking ticket? Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
It was a pinny, wasn't it?
You know, one of the biggest shocks.
He ate it.
One of the more surprising things about Dennis the Drunk was when they introduced random breath testing for all of the drivers within the Tour de France, ahead of the race and the convoy and everything else. So you have to be 0.0, no alcohol whatsoever. And Dennis used to start every day with a few wines in the start village, which only sort of topped up what he had filled up from the night before and the day before and the night before that, and yet still blew 0.0 and was allowed to go onto the stage. And no one could believe that that was accurate. There must have been a malfunction in the device, or they didn't want to catch people.
I remember the village once, they pour those little samples. They pour the sample, put it down, and Dennis grabbed the bottle and left them with the sample.
Yeah, we shouldn't laugh. He was a shocker.
Anyway, on that note, thanks for your support, guys. Get behind the show because you'll get more random stories like that.
What's your tip, Danny?
I think Michael Wood. Yeah, I think he's been all right. I think he sort of backed it off a couple of days. What do you reckon, John?
Yeah. And I did. I apologize because I called you Danny then. But Danny Dan. Michael Wood's a good one. Fulsang. Yeah. This is just left out of left field, but Fulsang's a guy that should be able to do this. He was a rider for the GC, but he's been completely absent this year. So, and he's sitting close to Woods on GC, but Woods has been sitting up to try and make sure he goes for the KOM jersey. If he does go up the road, then yeah, you can guarantee Wout is going to be up there, both of them.
Krusevic.
Yeah, he didn't look good on the last hill stage though, did he? When he was in the break, but he's another one that should be in the mix. The guy,
John, you've also got to be careful if because a lot of high profile people follow your tips on this show, so don't stuff them up.
Yeah, well, I'm giving them two: it's a break, Wout, or the Pog.
Which Wout? Which Wout?
Ah, very true. Wout Van Aert.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Good show tonight. Thanks again for tuning in, guys. We'll be back tomorrow night to recap Stage 17, and hopefully our tips are on the money.
We can see Paris. We'll all be upbeat.
Shout out to Dennis the Drunk. Hope you're well, mate. Take care, for us.
This is the winning ride of the Tour de France.